The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. Just about to turn 5 minutes past nine on this Tuesday, the 21st of February, 2023. Shrove Tuesday, Pancake Tuesday. We're looking for recipes here. If you've got any suggestions, 0866. Hey, if you have any pancakes, drop them in. Mountaintop Letter Kenny, 086 60 25,000. Honey, sugar, butter, all the stuff Caroline's giving up for Lent. Lash it on. Leave the Nutella in the fridge. Don't want that. Or maybe it goes in the cupboard. I don't know where Nutella goes. Anyway, 086 60 25,000. Share your pancake recipes if you wish. We might be giving you some suggestions a little later on as well. And the lines are open for everything else as well. Call us on 07491 25,000, WhatsApp and text. I gave you that number, and your email is comments@highlandradio.com. If you want to watch the show on your smart TV, your Fire Stick, open up the YouTube app or the Facebook Watch app and search Highland Radio. Watch us there or on your devices using the regular apps as well. All right, it's good to have you all on board wherever you are, and hopefully we're going to keep you entertained over the next 3 hours on the programme. Let's start with a look at what's making the front pages and the insides of today's newspapers. We'll start with the Donegal Democrat. 22 businesses affected by the Chrysler explosion last October have received almost €100,000 in emergency humanitarian support as efforts by the community to return to normal continue. Local businesses are fighting to get back to where they were before the event that changed so much in their locality. Local councillor Michael McClafferty said he welcomed the cash boost, adding anything that helped the village start the journey back to normality was welcomed. I don't know who got what in terms of financial assistance, but everyone recognises all help is welcome after what happened in the village, he said. On to the Derry Journal today. A cross-party delegation of Donegal councillors is set to descend on Dublin to make a public protest outside Leinster House to demand equality of 100% redress for the many thousands of victims of defective concrete homes. The deputation will consist of around 20 county councillors from Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, Sinn Féin, Labour and Independents who've responded to the call of affected homeowners for their elected local reps to stand up, be counted and send a very public message to government that the ongoing anguish and lack of equality endured by families victims to defective concrete blocks homes is utterly unacceptable. And I do hope, and I'm sure it's been the case, that the national broadcasters have been notified of the event, because it's pretty unique. You know, when can you think of the last time a cross-party delegation of local reps descended on the capital demanding something of government, and, you know, government members within those ranks demanding same? But, you know, you really need the cameras pointed at them for it to have as big an effect as is possible. So hopefully they've been notified, and hopefully they do turn out there. The Irish Independent tells us of the package being unveiled by government to address the cost of living crises. 200 bonus payment for all social welfare recipients, which will be welcome news, I'm sure. All social welfare recipients will receive a €200 bonus payment under a fresh round of cost of living supports agreed by the government, which is set to total £1.25 billion. The payment will be made to pensioners, carers, lone parents and people with disabilities, among others. The coalition leaders also agreed to give a €100 bonus for every child on the child benefit scheme. Additionally, there'll be €100 extra on the back-to-school clothing allowance to support families. Social Protection Minister Heather Humphreys went into the meeting of government leaders proposing a €150 bonus for all welfare rates. However, she argued at the meeting that it could be increased to €200. Now, as well as that, the 9% VAT rate for hospitality and, I presume, hairdressers and other businesses that also qualified for it currently, it's going to be extended until the end of August. That's going to cost £300 million. Which, I don't know, in terms of job support and support of the tourism industry, doesn't sound incredibly expensive with the type of money we're talking of. The cost of diesel, though, there will be increases on excise duty. This is diesel and petrol, of course. An increase in excise duty from June 1st. Petrol goes up by 6 cent and diesel by 5 cent. On September 1st, petrol will go up another 7 cent. Diesel will go up another 5 cent. The remaining 8 cent on petrol and 6 cent on diesel will increase on October 31st, which is, you're going to see a litre of petrol and diesel go up quite significantly. You can only hope that maybe, you know, maybe there might be a drop in the raw cost of these commodities, these fuels, that might offset it somewhat, but still, we're going to be, it's going to cost us an awful lot more to drive. The 9% rate on electricity and gas bills will be extended until the end of October. They are expecting those bills to come down over the course of the year, so hopefully there will be there will still be more money in our pockets come next winter. What do you think of that? 086 60 25,000. I suppose any support is welcomed. Does it go far enough? I'm not really quite sure. My focus, and it's beyond me, my focus would be to ensure that those who need the money get the money. You know, I mean, I presume there are people who receive a pension or people who receive child benefit that aren't under pressure. But everyone's going to get it. I'm not sure if that's right or wrong. It's a universal payment. Maybe more could be given to those that genuinely need it. But how do you determine that? I don't know. The EU expects Sunak to push ahead with protocol deal. We were talking about this in the show yesterday, as everyone was, I suppose. Senior figures in Dublin and Brussels expect UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak to push ahead with a new deal with the EU on the Northern Ireland protocol, despite signs yesterday of a rebellion within his own party. He's okay, though, because he's got Labour's backing. They've signed him a blank cheque, and he's got the backing of the senior members of his party. So you'll have a few junior ministers that will fall on the sword, a few others that will perhaps leave the party. But he has enough support to push through with this if he so wants to. Mr. Sunak is under intense domestic pressure from former Prime Minister Boris Johnson and the group of hardline Eurosceptics in his party, and with the DUP as yet undecided on whether to back a deal. The fate of the proposed agreement still hangs in the balance, though I would say it's quite heavily tipped towards a deal being announced. It'll be good for Sunak if he can get that over the line. And it's good for him, with everything that's going on, to have a decent relationship with his European neighbours. On to the Daily Mail now. I had to pick something out because a lot of the stories have replicated across the papers, of course. I do know some of you out there have an interest in Enoch Burke and what he's continuing to do, and he is continuing to do it. He's jeopardised his chances of the appeal court ruling in his case after, again, he returned to his former school after the midterm break. Mr. Burke, who was dismissed last month from Wilson's Hospital School in County Westmeath, insists the High Court order to stay away is invalid. Now, this despite the fact he is sacked. His repeated breaches of the order led to a three-month stay in Mountjoy for contempt of court and a daily fine of €700 per day. He now owes over €17,500. Court of Appeal President George Birmingham has instructed him that court orders are valid unless and until they're overturned by a higher court. Mr. Burke appealed the order, but Judge Birmingham warned the Court of Appeal could withhold its judgment if he continued to breach the order while the court is reaching its decision. So there's not really a very big out for him there. An interesting story. I'm not sure if there's anything from it, but I'm sure you saw over the weekend a lady, Julia Wendell is her name, and she released a video on social media. I think it was on TikTok or Instagram. It was on both. I'm not sure where it appeared first. And she feels that she might be Madeleine McCann. Now, this is obviously a very vulnerable woman because she's not aware of her identity or her history. So regardless of whether or not, and it's perhaps unlikely she is Madeleine McCann, this is a person that needs support. But a young woman who claims she is 100% convinced she's missing British girl Madeleine McCann has posted a new video to Instagram. Julia Wendell, who's 21, shared a video of herself chatting to police psychic Dr. Fia Johansson, who previously claimed in 2020 that Madeleine was living in Germany. In her latest video, Polish woman Julia said her family have shunned her over her claims. She said police in the UK and Poland have been ignoring her, but she wants a DNA test to prove she is the little girl who went missing from her holiday apartment in Portugal 16 years ago. Can you believe? She was just three at that time. It's understood the McCanns have agreed to the DNA test. Now, she's 21. Madeleine McCann was three when she disappeared 16 years ago. So basic maths would dictate that either she has her age wrong or it's not her. Well, Julia broke down in tears in the video and said her family have expressed their disapproval. In the clip, she said, "My grandma called me. She said, I'm a very bad person, that she doesn't want to meet me anymore. She started to shout at me. I asked her for a DNA test with her or with my parents, and she will not. She will not." That's where it finishes. It just kind of ends there. So, as I say, at the very, very least, there's a vulnerable woman there that needs support and not exploitation, I would suggest. We were talking about when energy prices might increase. A great deal of speculation because no one knows. It's in the gift of the energy suppliers. But the Mirror tells us today that families' hopes for imminent energy cost savings have been dashed as providers say it could be over a year before bills come down. Pinergy, which hiked its charges 7 times in the last 2 years, announced price cuts yesterday. But Bord Gáis Energy, Electric Ireland, Energia Flowgas and SSE Electricity are not set to follow Pinergy, they have confirmed. Pinergy CEO Enda Gunnell said, "We had committed to reducing prices when circumstances and market conditions allowed." Comparison firm Bonkers.ie warned Pinergy's rivals will now face pressure to announce cuts. Their spokesperson said, however, a lot will depend on their hedging strategies and when they bought their gas and electricity. Firms urged customers who need assistance with bills to contact them. But they're still quite expensive. And last but not least, your old iPhone could be worth a fortune. A first-generation Apple iPhone in its original box has sold for a world record of, wait for it, €50,000. 16 years after its release, the factory-sealed handset, which cost almost €560 when it went on sale in 2007, still has its plastic wrapping. Karen Green was gifted the iPhone by colleagues in the summer of 2007, but as she already had a mobile, she wrapped the handset in pyjamas and placed it in a shelf. Lo and behold, digs it out 16 years later, and it's worth €50,000. So it's an original, still in its box, still with its wrapping on. But hey, the price of those phones, it's not far off the cost of a new phone now. People spend an absolute fortune. I don't know where people get the money. I see them walking around with these iPhones, and I'm like, what? All right, 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts to that number, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. Good morning to Paul, Annie, Margaret, and pseudoscientist watching us on our social media. Okay, now let's welcome onto the programme David Fitzgerald, who's CEO of the Motor Insurers Bureau of Ireland. How are you getting on, David?
Not too bad, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
It's good to have you on the programme. Right, and this news emerged yesterday that 8.3% of all cars on Irish roads did not have insurance coverage last year. How are these figures collated? Are we confident that these aren't cars that aren't parked around the side of the house or sitting in forecourts or something?
We are, Greg. They're shocking figures. It means 1 in 12 vehicles are driving around without insurance and breaking the law. So what we do is we get the database of vehicles from the Department of Transport, those vehicles that are taxed, so that appear to be in use, and we compare them to a motor insurance database that our members, the motor insurers, have built. So we're pretty confident that they're accurate figures.
I mean, it really is a figure far higher than I would have guessed. I don't know which looks worse, 8.3% or 1 in every 12 vehicles that you see on the road is uninsured. And there are consequences of that, and we'll get into it. But, I mean, do we have any idea where that stands sort of on an international sort of scale?
Very high, Greg. So by way of comparison with our nearest neighbours, that'd be twice the level of uninsured driving that they see in the UK and 4 times the level of uninsured driving that they see in France. So, you know, we're calling for more enforcement on the back of those alarming figures. We have a potential solution. We have built an Irish motor insurance database that contains the insurance details of all motor vehicles in Ireland, and we can derive an uninsured list from that. And we want to get that information to the Gardaí so that the mechanism to do that on a safe legal basis without breaching data protection regulations is set out in the Road Traffic and Roads Bill 2021, which has been slowly working its way through the Oireachtas. So we're calling on the Oireachtas to fast-track that bill so we can get that information over to the Gardaí and so they can use it for enforcement with their you know, the devices they have in the guard cars that will automatically detect uninsured vehicles, so we can get them that data.
Yeah, but I'd be curious as to, say, for instance, how many, and I presume, are you talking about inputting this within the vehicle, or are you talking about sort of the number plate recognition cars? Because if it's the latter...
I'm talking about both. They have most of the road policing cars now have automatic number plate recognition technology, and they've already rolled this tech out as well to a couple of hundred mobile phones, with plans to roll it out to more to frontline policing. So I think they can point their mobility devices at vehicles and you know, very quickly establish whether or not the vehicle appears to be uninsured. And likewise with the Garda cars, that happens pretty automatically. So if we can get them this quality data, we think that can make a real difference. This type of strategy has been successful in other jurisdictions. The UK, for example, who have much lower levels of uninsured driving than we have, because it's costing a lot of the money. So we're a not-for-profit, and we compensate their victims, Greg, the victims of uninsured accidents. And we're paying out 70 to 75 million euros per annum to those victims. And we're all paying for that on our policy. So it's 30 to 35 euros goes on to everybody's motor policy in a levy to compensate, the victims of people who choose not to drive uninsured.
I mean, there's a couple of groups of people listening to us this morning. There will be a group that say it's not a bit wonder because of the cost of insurance and people have to do what they have to do to get to and from work and what have you, cost of living and decisions that have made that are driving that up. And then another group who will recognise that it's they that are paying for it, or they've maybe been in a collision with someone without insurance. And of course, then there's going to be a group of people somewhere in between. The reality is though, when you have this level of non-compliance, clearly an awful lot of people know that they're not going to get caught, that you can, duplicate these, that Gardaí aren't routinely putting them into a machine, that they're shining a light or glancing an eye over it. If the green stripe's there and the number plate looks okay, they'll wave you on. The only problem is if you're flagged, if they decide to actually really scrutinise your vehicle. And it's obviously generally known. Same as people know that they don't really necessarily have to hand in their licences if they receive a suspension. There's a lot of information out there as to how you can get around this stuff, seemingly.
Very frustrating. I mean, I don't accept the price issue. Having insurance is the law of the land. We can't pick and choose which laws we follow. It's a law that there's for good reason due to the serious injuries and death, unfortunately, caused by motor vehicles to third parties. And I suppose one of the reasons why we're calling for this bill, and raising awareness at the level of uninsured driving is, we strongly believe that, that the technology is a solution for some of the issues you're raising there, Greg. If people are duplicating insurance certificates, for example, that won't wash with this technology as it's rolled out to the Garda forces. So, if people are thinking they can take a chance on that, those days are numbered, Greg.
And the reality is the guards don't have to catch 187,000 uninsured drivers. Just 187,000 uninsured drivers have to feel there's a chance they might actually get caught.
Exactly, because the penalties are significant if you're caught, Greg. So the Gardaí will seize your vehicle on the spot. It's an automatic court appearance. It's 5 penalty points and a substantial fine of up to 5,000 euros. So it really isn't worth taking the chance.
There's a lot of stuff out there too about, and it's a small amount of vehicles, but vehicles that maybe have been brought into this country by people fleeing Ukraine or wherever it might be. As far as you're aware, as far as MIBI is concerned, all the same rules of the road apply, they're all equally enforced, or is there any leniency for vehicles that have been brought into the country by people fleeing war or oppression?
Well, the different solutions have been put in place for, well, not different, but there's things have been put in place to facilitate, for example, Ukrainian registered vehicles. So there's a system called Green Cards that can temporarily extend insurance from the Ukraine to allow those drivers to drive legally in this country. After a certain period of time, there'll be an obligation on those drivers to re-register those vehicles to Irish registrations if they plan to stay for the longer term. Mm-hmm. But that is something that the Department of Transport have a closely at, and insurers would be sympathetic. So
I just want to ask, how do you, not you specifically, you as an industry or with your knowledge, how do you ensure that the insurance that's being provided in Ukraine is actually underwritten? That, in other words, in the event of a collision, that
We have reciprocal arrangements with a similar body in Ukraine that will stand over Ukrainian green cards. If there are any Ukrainian drivers listening and they want some more information, if they go to our website, mibi.ie, we have some information up in English and Ukrainian that would assist Ukrainian drivers to ensure that they remain compliant with local regulation.
And finally, what is the block to Gardaí having access to this database, so that if there is a flag, it includes a flag on insurance if, say, for instance, if a number plate is scanned?
So the Data Protection Commissioner has told us we need a statutory legal basis to safely pass this information to the Gardaí. So that's contained within the Road Traffic and Roads Bill 2021 that's working its way through the Oireachtas. So we're calling the Oireachtas to pass that as quickly as possible, Greg, so that we have a safe basis. We're hoping that'll happen soon, and then we can start getting that information over to the Gardaí, and they can start cracking down on this frightening level of uninsured driving.
Yeah. All right. Listen, thanks for your time, David. Really appreciate it. Take care of yourself. David Fitzgerald, CEO of the Motor Insurers Bureau of Ireland, 086 60 25000. That's the WhatsApp and text number. Some more of your comments here. Greg, when a child turns 18, do they still need godparents, or can they change them as they never bother about them? Wow, that's an interesting question. Because godparenting and its importance kind of varies, I think, from family to family. What is a godparent's function after someone turns 18? Hopefully to remember birthdays, but it's more important than that. But why would you change them then? Let us know what you think. This might be an issue that I'm not really aware of. 086 60 25000. What role does an adult, or what role does a godparent potentially have in the life of an adult? What is their actual role for children? I mean, what is the whole notion of it? I seem to remember it was that, God forbid anything happened to your parents, that they would look after you. But that's not really how it works. The courts, I'm not sure, would recognise that, was it? And we were talking yesterday, actually, to Gillian about wills. There was no mention of godparents there. So what is the current function of godparents? My understanding is, as I say, I'm going back in time in my memory here, is that, you know, it was to do with religion. And if your parents succumbed, that they would be there to raise you in the religion you were born into. So, A, what's the role in childhood, and B, is there any role after 18? Can you divorce them as an adult, and would you get other ones? I'll read the message again. Greg, when a child turns 18, do they still need godparents, or can they change them as they never bother about them? It's an interesting one. I've never thought about it. We were talking yesterday about hopeful progress in relation to a leisure centre in Boncran. Our caller says a leisure centre doesn't bring tourism. This new centre will be handed over to a private business, which, like other centres, will run at a loss. How does this make any sense? Well, look, I don't know the ins and outs of the business model for leisure centres, but there are areas much smaller than Boncran that have access to leisure centres. The whole of Inishowen doesn't have one, and you've got busloads of children going into Derry or into Letterkenny or wherever they might have to go. Maybe there's hotels available in Inishowen that have swimming pools. I don't think so. I think the last time I talked about it, we were being told they would have to go elsewhere. Even if it runs at a loss, the people of Inishowen deserve a leisure centre. People of the capital, in inverted commas, maybe Boncrana. Jack, you can't get double government funds for pools. Hi, where does my road tax that I pay on my two cars go? It goes into general taxation, I can tell you that for a fact. But this Letterkenny resident goes on to say, I recently seen potholes being repeatedly filled with cold tar and flattened with a shovel. Is this a standard road building procedure from the Roads Authority? I think not. So where does my money get spent on, if not the roads? As I say, it goes into just general taxation. Interesting comments from one of the councillors in Letterkenny yesterday. Was it Jerry McMonagall talking about a new machine which can quite quickly and effectively repair potholes? They're hiring it, I believe. But I think the council should have a couple of those. They can react more, you know, quickly to these problems. For defective concrete block homeowners, where the owners are elderly, in the event of death or of the second spouse on a mica home, what happens to the mica claim? Does it automatically pass on to the next of kin? That was a question for our wills expert. I'm open to correction on this, and I really should be, because I think I cocked up the roundabout in Letterkenny and on Wednesday, just as the show was going off air, and didn't come back on Thursday and Friday. Just shall I go back to that road in Letterkenny, by the way? The road where this is the Tesco roundabout, if you're familiar with it, at the bus station there. Someone was asking, which lane do you go if you're going out the Watport Road? What road is that, Caroline? The station road? Over the Pierce Road, and it's the right lane because it states that on the road, okay? So the scenario I was given was if it was a regular roundabout that didn't have any specific designation printed on it. So it's the right lane for going over the road I mentioned there. As it relates to the claim, my understanding was that the claim would pass with the applicant. But as I say, please correct me on that. I don't want to give any misinformation. The box my daughter is doing at school are Romeo and Juliet, and the teacher won't do the bit where they kill themselves. And the other is Of Mice and Men, which contains racist language, which she won't allow them to use. These are hailed as classics books, yet they won't allow them to be read in the context they were intended. Right, I mean, listen, I wonder, like, I have dedicated my life to, as best as possible, to ensuring my children are, you know, able to look after themselves, that they can handle their emotions and stuff, because they've been through quite a bit over the last 9 or 10 years. But I don't think protecting them from words is going to help at all. Like, I just wonder now, at 8, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13-year-old, a lot of them, not all of them, but my word, they're in for a shock, aren't they, when they go to school and go to college and people use certain words, or they have to cook for themselves or manage their own finances. I'd just be fearful that we are raising a generation of children that will struggle to operate in a very, very tough world, because it is a tough world and it's tougher now. I mean, you know, I'd say to that teacher, read about Romeo and Juliet killing themselves, and then give the children a space to ask a question if they so wish. You know, by not talking about it, it doesn't help. Talk about it, right? And then allow them the opportunity to ask a question if need be. That's education. Use the language in Mice and Men in context. Point out that it's in context. Explain to them why it's offensive now. And I'm not sure if I'm correct with the book of Mice and Men, you can use that to contextualize a bit of history on it. You know, educate people. Burying your head in the sand does not really achieve anything. Right. Commentary increase in diesel. It's time that the government were gone. I swear to you, lads, if you think everything's going to change with the change of government, you're in for some shock. But anyway, how come they can find the money to go away for Paddy's Day yet? And all, they are putting more cost on the general public. Now, maybe when you put it like that. Commentary, learner drivers. There was a law put in place that learner drivers are not permitted to drive on their own, but it's never enforced. What happened if a learner driver travelling alone hits a car? If they're not insured, the third party has no recourse, as the learner driver is not insured. Well, that's not quite true. There's been quite a level of enforcement of that. I'll get the stats for you, because I remember reading them a wee while back and I was surprised at how high they are. I'm not ready, Caroline. You know, look, Caroline's saying, move on, go, go, go. All right, I'll do it now. We'll take a quick break. I'll dig up those stats for later, because I think it's quite a high level of people being... I'm not sure your insurance... Again, I want to be careful not to mislead. I'm not sure your insurance is invalidated if you're driving on your own. That's something we're going to have to get some clarity on. Okay, we were asked earlier on by a listener, you know, what function do your godparents serve when you hit 18? Because I think one wanted to kind of divorce them and get new ones. But this caller says, I changed one of the godparents for one of my children because they completely ignored them. I never told them, as there is no contact. The person I chose is much nicer and better all-round person who's involved in my child's life. Okay, that's an interesting one. Any more on that? 086 60 25000. Mary T. Sweeney is a representative for Ain't Two in Donegal. Mary T., good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
It's good to have you back on the show. Right, we're talking about, I mentioned you're representative for Ain't Two, didn't I? We're talking about the residential zoned land tax. It's a new tax that was introduced. What's the issue here as far as you see it, Mary T.?
I have several major concerns about this, in that this is a new land tax that people in Donegal need to be particularly aware of, because I have communicated and sent out feelers around the county, and a lot of people that I have met, I have never actually met any ordinary householder that is aware of it, and yet it's going to impact an enormous amount of house owners, and it will impact them more seriously in the sense that they have to submit information to their local revenue office if they have more than 1 acre of land around their property. And furthermore, if they have a garden, a horticultural thing where they grow potatoes or they grow, that may not be included. So that will actually be subject to this new 3% tax on their land annually, unless they get an exclusion for it.
Now, the aim of this tax was to encourage The use of land for housing, this is one of the government's responses to it. So in other words, you won't sit on it paying tax. You will sort of make it available for development, sell it, maybe develop yourself, I don't know. But how difficult is it to sort of get yourself excluded from this or to appeal it? Or do we know anything about that?
Well, you can't because you've missed the closing date. Ah. And what's more than this, Greg, I did send some of the research I've done over the weekend. I've only become aware of this last Thursday, Friday, around that date, that I saw an article in the Irish Times saying that all the big developers in Dublin have put in exemptions for their land. So meaning the people that this was really designed to target, the large developers sitting on large land banks with planning, ready to roll, but they won't build because the price at the moment, the materials have become too expensive. So this is not the way. You cannot put a Dublin incentive tax to get development around the bigger cities, the bigger areas of population. What they've done is they've applied this to rural Donegal, to 11 towns and villages around Donegal. And I think it's important for people to know it. If I'm allowed, I'll read out the 11, because I don't believe that people, I phone people in Bunkrana that have a small 8 or 10 acres, they knew nothing about it in time. Multiple homeowners, if your home has more than 1 acre, you should have registered before the 1st of January 2023. Okay? Now, there's no tax implication if you registered before the 1st of January 2023, but most people did not, that I have spoken to in the Letterkenny area and in the Bunkrana area. Further concerns are that I think I'm going to be calling on the government to pause this for Donegal. Some of the other key concerns for me are the small farmers. I've spoken to several small farmers around Letterkenny particularly, and one in Bunkrana, and they knew nothing about it. And they thought, but sure, I'm not developing. And I said, yeah, but that's the point. They're trying to, if the council has you on the map, there's a new map, and I implore for people to go onto the Donegal County Council website and type in RZLT, and that stands for Residential Zoned Land Tax. And perhaps if you can put up a link on your show.
But I'm not sure the window has closed because there are three stages, isn't there? There's a draft map, supplemental map, and the final map. And the final map won't be completed until the 1st of December. So we have the draft map at the moment. The supplemental map allows people to have a look at it and see where their land is at and what have you. Public notices to announce the publication of the supplemental map must be placed in newspapers by no later than the 1st of May. So there's still a window, if I'm reading the legislation correctly. I'm not reading it. So what's the supplemental map and the final map then? We have the draft map currently?
Yeah, the draft map's the only map that the public are, in my reading of this, and I've had extensive reading of it over the last 3 days. In my reading of this, the only time that you had the opportunity, this, and the time frame is one of the reasons I want this suspended for Donegal immediately. This was advertised on the 1st of November, 2022, Greg. Mm-hmm. And a window of 7 to 8 weeks, less than 8 weeks, was given to the 1st of January, 2023. To actually make your submission to this, because there was officially map available in the Donegal County Council offices around the county, or you could have looked it up online. Mm-hmm. That sort of information for public consultation is not wide enough, and people, the general public, are not aware of that. Only developers and builders are aware of that type of information. When you see a zoning land tax, most people don't know what size their garden is. If you have an orchard at the side of your garden, you think it's part of my family home. You may be implicated in all of this and have a tax to pay if you do not become familiar with it. Look it up. And the first thing you must do is, if you are zoned in the red line in the map, then you need to start asking questions. If you're the small farmer, if you have a small site, a site you bought as an investment for your children when they grow up, if it's zoned in the red zone in the map for your Bunkrana, Carndonagh, Killybegs, Donegal Town, there's 11 areas around the county: Dunlow, Donegal Town, Balbafay, Stranorder, Ballyshannon, Bundoran, and I think I've gone Muff. Down at Muff, there's several areas around Muff. There's a specific map for those areas. And if your house or land or garden or field that you grow potatoes on every year is in that map, you need to make yourself familiar with this, because it's extremely serious implications.
And it's a lot of money, because, you know, 3% of the market value of the land, especially if it's zoned as for development, That's got to be quite a significant levy annually.
All this land in this map is automatically now zoned development by our Donegal County Councillors and the council, the local authority itself. And the only chance you had to object to your land or to try and get it rezoned was in that window of opportunity between the 1st of November and the 1st of January, the Christmas period, which is the most, the greatest period of keeping, taking your eye off the ball in relation to public notices and events happening because of the Christmas period and people getting ready for family and getting ready for Christmas and what have you. So I have grave concerns that there wasn't an adequate consultation period given, that this is really, in a sense, has missed the target of who was supposed
well,
to
be. Well, look, listen. There's a lot of different outlets and platforms in Donegal, by the way. So I don't want anyone to think that I'm, blowing up this program or the station or anything. But I sit here for 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, and cover a lot of stuff. I don't remember doing any public information piece on this, you know, to because we are, you know, we're a significant part of the whole voice to sort of let people know what's happening, how they can make a submission, how they can check their lands in advance. You know, there was 132 submissions received, I believe, by the council. But, you know, that's only a drop in the ocean. I wonder how much effort was actually made to get all this information out to the public so they could make, you know, they could make submissions where applicable.
Well, one of the greatest concerns I have from a Donegal point of view is that it doesn't seem to be one message fits all. It's very cumbersome and difficult to read the documents. The easiest I would recommend people to read is the one Your Questions Answered. And it's difficult to find, but if you scroll to the very, very bottom of the page on the Donegal County Council website in small writing, you will see Your Questions Answered in red writing at the bottom. That will give you an initial overview of what this is about. And again, if you don't pay your 3% because you didn't know, and it's your duty to know it, and it's your responsibility to assess it and send your assessment of your land in to the revenue. And this is a three-hand approach that's local authority who are the mediators, and they really have no say, only providing the maps. It's revenue will be actually dealing with on that map.
All right, just to back up what you're saying here, making a submission on the draft mapping, which was already done. Written submissions or observations in respect of the draft map may be made to the planning authority in the following ways, blah, 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 blah. The deadline for submission is the 1st of January 2023. Submission should include a name and address, reasons for inclusion or exclusion of lands, because it might be in the advantage of some to have them zoned, rezoned if they choose to sell it, okay? Along with a map at certain scale, where the submission is made by landowner, clearly identifying the area of land subject of the submission. So as I say, those submissions had to be in by the 1st of January. Now, the council drafted this map having regard to land being serviced, have access to services like roads, footpaths, public lighting, surface water, wastewater, water supplies. That pulls in an awful lot there. And the land zones must allow for residential development. So the colouring, say it's red, is it? In other words,
yes,
land,
the red,
that, right?
The red,
how extensive? I haven't saw this map. How extensive is it? Like, is there a lot of land that's red now, as far as you could see in going through the maps?
The whole town's red. My great concern is that the houses in Ard O'Donnell are on it. The houses in Glenwood Park are on it. New Lane Road's on it. College Road's on it. And I'm aware of different case scenarios that are very, very disturbing. An elderly lady living that had a small garden behind their family home. They bought at a later stage. And when the kids were small, they grew vegetables in it. But technically now it's in the red zone. It is in the circumference of the town in Letterkenny. So because it's in the red zone, it's automatically a residential zone. That property that was bought as a garden is now a site that could be worth anywhere between $200,000 and $300,000.
We have this situation now, right, whereby landowners, people who are trying to, you know, they gather assets maybe for to leave to their family or whatever, or just happen to have it inherited to them, are potentially being penalised to force them for this land to be developed. So the general public are being penalised to make this. So at the same time, we've got developers going into cosy meetings with decision makers looking for breaks to say, oh, well, we'll build some houses, but we need this and we need that and we need these breaks. So the people build it feels like another situation where all the odds are stacked against regular Joe or Josephine.
And the small
out there.
Farmer.
So the Egypts, you're taxed into letting your land be used, whilst those that are going to use it are incentivized because they won't build it, and they've got this country by the back of the hair, let's put it like that. Because if they say we're not going to build, you're banjaxed. Government have set out targets that they have to meet, and there's a group of individuals that they need to meet them. So they have all the cards. Yet here we are. If you're lucky enough to have a little bit of land in a certain area, you're being compelled by way of a 3% tax per year on its market value to give up your land.
And if you don't pay it, there are significant supplementary taxes that can come on top of that, to such an extent that if you fall behind the overall value of your land by a percentage, then they can seize your land.
Right. Well, if someone wanted to write a catchy headline, they could call it and probably make a strong argument for it. It's like a developer's land grab.
I don't want to alarm people. I want to specifically reach out to people that have an uncle or an aunt that has a small farm, you know, anything under 10, 15, 20 acres that's sitting around the periphery of Letterkenny, Buncrana, Carndonna, Bundoran, Killybegs, Donegal Town, Dunlow, Muff, Balbafaith, Stranorlar or Ballyshannon. You people, please, please, if you're younger or you're older and you're IT literate, go on to the actual website that's very easy to use, is the Sligo one. And what I've found from the research, which really disturbs me, is there appears to be differences in the way the information is relayed in different sites.
Okay. So, well, listen, I mean, we're going to reach out to the council. I'm not doubting what you're saying for a moment, but reach out to the council to see what they have to say on this. As you say, you're not trying to alarm people. There's an awful lot of people this doesn't apply to. If you're in between towns or outside boundaries and what have you, you're talking specifically about those named towns, and it's almost within town boundaries, I presume, Mary T. So this is not covering the whole county, but certain areas. Check out the map, see if it applies to you. And we're going to pursue the council to see what they have to say on this.
I have spoken initially to the IFA as well in relation to the farming, and I know they're going to open up their own concerns as well. And what really concerned me, Greg, if you look at some of the differences in the websites in different county councils, I couldn't believe that there wasn't a general format for layout and procedures for councils around the country. But in some council areas, they have invited an expression of interest for residential zone development land and turnkey project, and they don't have a closing date until the 16th of March 2023. Why is it different in Donegal? Why is there differences?
I don't know. We'll try and get to the bottom of that, Mary T.
What about the people in the nursing home and their small holdings sitting there at the moment? They're either temporary in the nursing home and waiting to get out, or they're in long term and the family have been managing the farm for that person. They may not be aware of it. 3% on 100,000 value of one site would be 3,000 per year, and you may not be aware of it. And if it accrued over a number of years, then there's a significant deficit there that most people don't have cash. You might have a small plot of ground, a couple of fields, and especially the smaller farmer, they don't have that type of cash to pay out because your land has now been zoned residential instead of agricultural.
Okie doke. Mary T, thanks for your time. It's interesting information. Have a good day.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you. Take care of yourself.
Bye-bye. Mary T Sweeney there, representative for AIN, to say she's not looking to alarm people, but I think it's definitely an important topic that we need to get some clarification on. What do you think? Are you affected by this? Maybe you've dug into this yourself. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts. Did I see a pancake arrive here, Caroline? Who from? Can you tell me? No. Kelly's across the road. Well, there you go. You see, if you don't ask, you don't receive. We have a fully loaded pancake. How long is it till the 10 o'clock news? 7 minutes. Right, okay, thanks to Kelly's across the road. Great group of people over there, of course. We really do appreciate that. It's a lovely gesture. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts, just to remind you on that stuff we've been talking about. Let me see. I work as a motor recovery claims handler. I would say that I have between 20 to 30 claims that involved uninsured drivers. We never get the money back from them. There you go. Another caller says, I'm so sick of working and barely being able to meet my needs and pay my bills, yet my neighbour next door, who's on benefits, is driving a Jeep, and with a family of two adults and four kids, they're heading off to Spain in the April break. Someone tell me what I'm doing wrong. Every situation is different. I think I would personally, I can't, I'm not dictating to anyone, but I know people who can't work for one reason or another, and they are living, you know, day to day. So I don't think we should group all people in the same, but I get you. You're out there slogging and you feel the people next door aren't, and they're doing better than you. A lot of people will share that view. I get that, don't get me wrong, but it's not the same for everyone either. Do you get me? I'm not going to lie to you. I had a pancake during the break. I actually really did. It's terrible. And I ate it all and swallowed it in 2.5 minutes. The weather this morning and early afternoon will be mostly cloudy with patches of light rain or drizzle. More persistent rain will develop in the late afternoon and evening. Highest temperatures of 10 or 11 degrees with moderate to fresh and gusty southerly winds. But as we told you at the start of the week, it's going to get a little bit cooler as the week wears on. Let me see more of your comments here. Again, another busy morning. Thank you so much. Insurance is very much on the rise since car insurance has went down through the government investigation into price fixing. Commercial premises, church buildings and other organisations which have premises all got a hike in their insurance. Also, my parents, who are both over 70, recently renewed their insurance and both had to get medicals. They need one every 3 years for a licence, but now require one every year for insurance. First time this has happened. That's pretty significant, you know. An awful lot of people listening to this programme and around the county, over 70 years of age, out in the roads all of the time. All of them are going to require a medical every year for their insurance. I think 70 seems a bit tight on that, isn't it? Is that the case? I'm sure it is, as the listener said, but give us more info. 086 60 25,000. We all know uninsured drivers. The last time I called the Gardaí to report it, they were more interested in getting my details than taking his. There needs to be a dedicated reporting line for uninsured drivers. Hi, Greg. Did the fuel allowance get anything? Not that I'm aware of, but that doesn't mean it didn't. I just didn't see it. I just didn't see it there. That might be something that would happen heading into the winter, later in the year. What about workers keeping the show on the road? Do they receive support with diesel going up in September? Not sure, and it's not. It's going up in increments up until September as well. Sorry to inform you. Does the working family payment get a bonus? Again, I didn't see that. It's all going to be announced. What's happened is the headlines have been leaked. So I can't say, because it wasn't in the leaks, that it's not going to happen. And I don't want to mislead anyone. So we're going to have Charlie Weston coming on with us a little later on to go through it all, just as soon as the cabinet sign off on it, because then we're talking about pure facts rather than conjecture. Though an awful lot that's in the papers obviously is accurate, but it doesn't give the full picture.